It's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 5th, 2015. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Tales, Finding New in the Old. For Lynn Dixon, Decatur Township Cemetery Director since August, there are stories and then there are stories. He told some of each Thursday during a tour of Greenwood Cemetery, organized by the Macon County Association for Home and Community Education, but nevertheless showed a preference for cold, hard facts. It's a ghost story to me. It's a story. A ghost story to me. It's a story, Dixon said, launching into a tall tale almost at once. After asking if anyone knew where Abraham Lincoln's corpse was temporarily hidden after a botched body snatching at Oak Ridge Cemetery in Springfield in 1876, Dixon let his voice drop to a loud whisper. "They put it in that mausoleum over there," he said, referring to the ornate underground final resting place of John Miller, a key figure in the organization of Macon County in 1839. Then he pointed out that the mausoleum, unlike most others in the cemetery, has no doors and is sealed shut. Dixon told the other kind of story when he talked about a headstone recently uncovered nearby, one marking the grave of Mary Hanks, Lincoln's first cousin once removed. "She wasn't in the inventory, but she is now," he said. Hanging on his every word were 48 tour-goers, some of whom had never seen the historic cemetery by day and were impressed by its scenic 105 acres and role as a resting place for 30,000 souls. Dixon talked about plans to build a columbarium to receive ashes of the dead to replace a long-gone Colosseum mausoleum. Greenwood's only public mausoleum was built in 1908, but its more than 100 bodies were relocated and the decaying structure was demolished in 1967. Indeed, Ron Otto of Decatur was one of the many people who bought $5 solar lights to support the cause, designating his to be placed on the grave of silent film star Jacqueline Logan, who played Mary Magdalene in the 1927 film King of Kings. Pausing outside the Miller Cruikshank Mausoleum, which holds the bodies of Hieronymus Mueller and 9 family members, Peg Neely of Decatur told a story of her own. She described what happened when she and other members of the class of 1959 from Eisenhower, MacArthur, and Stephen Douglas High Schools were permitted to go inside last September. One of the ladies said, "I don't want to go in there by myself," Neely said. Then another guy said, "You won't be by yourself." Trees. Diversity takes root with new park district trees. The ravages of drought, time, and pests have taken their toll on the trees in Decatur parks. By itself, the invasive species emerald ash borer is expected to kill hundreds of ash trees throughout the Decatur Park District. Dry weather in recent years did not help matters. Time, too, is claiming more and more oak trees, said Josh McGrath, the Park District horticulturist. It was because of these problems that the Decatur Parks Foundation chose to commemorate the district's 90th anniversary last year with a fund drive to raise money for trees. The drive, conducted through the Radiothon in partnership with Newhoff Media and Soy Capital Bank and Trust, collected $22,372. "It's really about replacing trees that we've lost in the past 3 or 4 years," said Ryan Raleigh, the Park District's Director of Operations. The district's horticulture department planted 74 trees last fall and will plant another 74 this summer, with another 50 or so scheduled for this fall. The trees chosen to represent a broad spectrum of species, as diversity makes it less likely that a huge number will be killed by a particular pest or disease. "That's part of the problem with the ash trees," McGrath said. "They were so widely planted as a municipality tree, and so you have a lot of trees like that in close proximity to each other. They get a disease or an insect pest, and it wipes the whole thing out." Some of the new trees include bald cypress, bur oak, dogwood, sugar maple, tulip, white pine, redbud, and red oak. They will be planted in Fairview, Nelson, Hess, Monroe, and Crest Haven Parks, among others. Each tree will receive 15 to 20 gallons of water 3 times a week, even if it rains, McGrath said. That regular watering is crucial to keep them alive. And he's got a chart to keep track of all the new trees and their schedule. The horticulture staff will likely work through planting trees for the next month in between other duties, he said. For residents who are getting ready to plant their own trees, McGrath offered key advice. Don't use potting soil to fill in the hole. People might do this thinking that they are helping give the tree an extra boost in its new home, but instead it's harmful. What happens is the trees, they love that soil, so the roots will start going around and round in circles in that hole, and it kills the tree, he said. Decatur Parks Foundation Director Jill Appleby said that the foundation is revamping its donation programs for trees and benches. Anyone who is interested in purchasing those items or making a general donation to the Horticulture Department should contact her at 217-422-5911. That's Jill Appleby at 422-5911. Richland celebrates GED students who persevered. Though new parameters in the GED testing process have led to a hefty decline in graduates, that didn't keep 9 individuals from furthering their education Thursday. During a graduation ceremony at Richland Community College, the first batch of students to pass the new GED test through the college's adult education program were recognized for their perseverance. These students have showed their willingness to adapt to change, instructional specialist Crystal Callerman said. In 2014, the GED exam underwent considerable changes to its academic, financial, and mechanical makeup. The test was revamped to better align with Common Core, increasing the difficulty in its 4 sections of language arts, mathematical reasoning, social studies, and science. The cost has more than doubled to complete all sections, from $50 to $120, and the format is now exclusively digital, which can present both an economic barrier for those in financial distress and technological barrier for those without sufficient computer skills, Callerman said. They are not just studying for a test, they're building college and career readiness skills, she said. They are expected to know more and have to spend more time to prepare. Tanya Young, veteran GED instructor for 22 years, said that in the past the area would graduate 300 to 500 people each year, but the number of students has declined on the county, state, and national level. Being a part of such a small group, the 4 graduates who attended the ceremony on Thursday felt an extra sense of pride. With the new version of the test, there's been more and more work and more time, but I'm proud I passed, said 20-year-old Christian Hilvety, who looks to pursue higher education and study music. Marcus Rabrin, 31, completed the program within 15 weeks and has begun taking college courses online to become a certified veterinary assistant. Supporting him at the ceremony were his mother, brother, wife, and 2 children. He said he and his wife, who is also pursuing a GED, want to set a good example for their 12-year-old son, Austin, and 9-year-old daughter, Faith, to earn a high school diploma and continue on to college. The longer you wait, the harder it's going to be, and it's really going to hold you back, he said. The other graduates were Sean Rumble, Jason Chandler, Mason Johnson, Matt March, Alexis Richardson, Sean Robb, and Gerald White. Jessica Pickle, director of the adult education program, said the certificate represents an open door for the graduates to transition into higher education, the workforce, or the military. But I think it's those other things you learn along the way that are really going to advance you in your life. Not knowing how to solve the quadratic equation or how to find the slope of a line, but Things like having the respect for others, being prepared, being professional, and maintaining that desire to always excel is going to keep you going forward, she said. High hopes. Work already ongoing on Logan County Marijuana Facility. Lincoln. The official groundbreaking is Saturday, but crews already are working at the site of an $8 million medical marijuana cultivation center, expected to create 150 construction jobs and 40 permanent positions in the Logan County area. The Logan County Board really took the lead in recruiting this facility and bringing it here, said Logan County Economic Development Partnership Executive Director Bill Thomas. They saw it as an opportunity to expand our agriculture base, which is a leading industry in Logan County and very important to us. The 40,000 square foot facility will be at the intersection of Old Route 66 and 1800th Street north of Lincoln. Members of the Logan County Board will be at the 9:30 a.m. groundbreaking to welcome representatives from Chicago-based Cresco Labs, which has state cultivation center permits in Lincoln, Chicago, and Kankakee. The Illinois Department of Agriculture oversees the cultivation centers under a pilot program signed into law by then-Governor Pat Quinn in August 2013. State law limits the number of cultivation centers to one in each of the 22 state police districts and a total of 60 dispensaries throughout the state. The Logan County facility is the one assigned to Springfield-based Illinois State Police District 9. We are committed to the success of this program and are prepared to hit the ground running to provide safe, effective treatment to patients in need, said Dominic Sergi, Executive Vice President of Cresco Labs. Sergi said the facility will be built from the ground up, incorporating the latest construction design and technology. Following the groundbreaking, the Logan County Economic Development Partnership Office will host a public informational meeting about the facility at 10:30 a.m. in the Davidson Sheffer Gymnasium at Lincoln College. Officials will discuss the new facility and how it will operate, when it will begin operations, and employment opportunities. 40 jobs are expected to be available once the project is ready for operation. Thomas said that the number could grow in the future. There is a very nice range of good jobs, Thomas said. That goes from gardening work to growing plants and several management positions, which will require college degrees. It's a good opportunity for Logan County. The county board approved the zoning request in September with only one vote against from board member Jan Shoemaker. Some constituents contacted me with the time to voice their concerns from a philosophical standpoint, but it wasn't a major concern for anybody, she said. There was nobody that protested at meetings or anything like that, and I think once the vote was taken, people accepted it without much of a problem. It's heavily regulated by the state anyway. Paina teen hoping to give back to make a wish. Paina. A Paina girl is using her love of boating on Lake Shelbyville to raise funds for the national charity that provided her pontoon boat with a fundraising event Saturday at Lake Shelbyville's Dam West Recreation Area. Emily Kuhn, 14, is hoping up to 1,000 people will come to her Hakuna Matata Fest from 2 to 8 p.m. I'm really excited, she said earlier in the week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Emily was diagnosed with aplastic anemia, a condition in which bone marrow fails to provide red and white blood cells and platelets, in December 2013. The volleyball-playing teen was told that even a small injury could cause a life-threatening bleeding event. It was scary, but then we found out what to do, she said. What Emily needed was a bone marrow transplant. She had chemotherapy to kill her existing bone marrow, and in May of 2014 received a transplant from what physicians called a perfect match, her sister Claire. Claire and Emily's mother, Gina Kuhn, said 7-year-old Claire understood the importance of her gift. She said, I'm a superhero, Gina Kuhn said, and she really is our superhero. After healthcare workers at St. John's Hospital in Springfield submitted Emily's name to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, she received a pontoon boat earlier this year. On Saturday, she hopes to help other children receive their wishes by raising funds through concessions, children's game vendors, games, vendors, band performances, volleyball matches, and local fire department's tug-of-war competition. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will provide water safety demonstrations, and dozens of boaters are expected to attend. The Corps has been so good to work with us, Hakun said, that we're expecting up to 1,000 people, and they said they'd be glad to help. Hakuna Matata, from the Disney movie The Lion King, is a special name for Emily, who will be a freshman at Pena High School this fall. It has our family name, Kun, in it, and it also means no worries, she said. No worries. Store owner uses machete on customer during an argument. Rafat Ketuam, 32, of near North Side store owner, was arrested on a preliminary charge of aggravated battery for allegedly slashing a customer with a machete after the customer threw a candy box at him. Ketuam was interviewed by police Wednesday at Last Stop MLK, 1597 North Martin Luther King Drive, about an incident that occurred there about 4:05 p.m. that day. He said he and Kenneth L. Murphy had a verbal argument, which led to Murphy picking up a cardboard box filled with candy on the customer's side of the counter and firing it at Ketuam, said an affidavit by a Decatur police officer. Ketuam stated after being struck in the face with the cardboard box, he unsheathed a machete he had behind the counter and struck Murphy with him once in the back, the affidavit said. Murphy suffered a laceration about 7 inches long that required 27 stitches to close at the Decatur Memorial Hospital. Murphy admitted to police that he threw the candy box at Ketuam, which resulted in the store owner reaching across the counter and striking him with the machete. Murphy, 43, was arrested on charges of battery and criminal trespass to property. He was issued a notice to appear in circuit court July 7th. Ketuam was arrested at 4:55 p.m. Wednesday and booked into the Macon County Jail. His bond was set for $50,000. After posting the requisite $5,000 cash, he was released pending his arraignment July 7th. In a prior incident, Ketuam was convicted December 20, 2010, on a charge of battery after he and his brother Nader punched and kicked a 29-year-old man in another store, which they jointly owned at that time. The attack occurred after the victim requested that they return the satellite dish that belonged to him, which was mounted on the roof. The victim suffered abrasions to his neck and swelling to his ear. Rafat Ketuam was sentenced to 12 months of conditional discharge and ordered to pay, along with his brother, a total of $7,300. Murphy, who was released from prison April 3, 2014, has served 8 prison sentences since 1991 for crimes that include aggravated discharge of a firearm, robbery, burglary and domestic battery, and bodily harm. Faster Pastor brings spirited rivalry to Macon Speedway. Macon. 6 pastors from area churches will give new meaning to the phrase spirited rivalry on Saturday. The group will gather on the track of Macon Speedway at 7 p.m. to vie for the title of Faster Pastor during the B.G. Nevitt Memorial Faster Pastor Race. The annual event has pitted local pastors against others for several years, but Saturday will mark the second race honoring former G.T. Church leader lead pastor B.G. Nevitt, who died in a motorcycle accident on U.S. 36 in August 2013. Nevitt had a well-known passion for all things automotive and championed the track, claiming Faster Pastor fame on more than one occasion. He was a real advocate for pushing this event, said Drake Nelson, general manager of Macon Speedway. This is our way of showing our appreciation to him. In addition to honoring Nevitt, the event aims to join different congregations for a bit of loud entertainment where they can show support for their pastor in a different environment than they might be used to, said Nelson. For Pastor Doug Bender of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Decatur, the closest experience he had on a racetrack involved go-karts, and this weekend he will find himself behind the wheel of a four-cylinder Hornet. "I've never been in a race car, but I'm excited to face off against some of Decatur's most competitive, spirited fellow pastors," he said. Bender said the collaborative effort will serve as a good example of unity among area churches. "Getting all the pastors and congregations together is a picture that we don't see a lot of," he said. Representing GT Church will be Pastor Rick Spangler, who continued Nevitt's legacy last year and won the inaugural memorial race. Other pastors will be featured in the race that are feature, who will be featured in the race are Mark Phillips of Boiling Springs Church of God in Decatur, Rod Hyde of Destiny Fellowship in Mohegan, Steve House of Temple Baptist Church in Decatur, and Christopher Chappelle of Body of Christ Ministries in Macon. Building Commission passes amended library agreement. Decatur Public Building Commission officials remain positive that action can soon be undertaken on the long-proposed space-sharing plan between Macon County and the Decatur Public Library. The Commission Board unanimously passed a new lease agreement Thursday morning that clarifies the lease language between the Commission, Decatur Public Building Commission, and Macon County. The lease agreement is different from the one approved by the Commission last month, as it includes clarification language for renegotiation at the end of the 20-year lease. It also removes language regarding a customer price index adjustment. The language about renegotiation is similar to leases the Commission has with other facilities it controls. The library already has passed the amended language, and the county board is expected to take it up at its meeting next week. The deal also awaits approval from the Decatur City Council, which meets again June 15th. It also depends on the county's ability to sell the Macon County office building at 141 South Main Street to 101 Main Place LLC, which intends to redevelop it for residential use. But commission officials, along with those at the library and county, have said that they hope to still be on track for all language to be approved within the month. The goal is for renovations and the move to be completed by early next year. Under the plan, the Building Commission would purchase the library building for $3.1 million instead of paying a lump sum. The commission would essentially pay for the building by giving the library a break on its rent, keeping the rate flat at $615,000 annually for 20 years. The Building Commission would resurface the library's dilapidated parking lot during the construction and would also install a video recording security system on the perimeter of the property. Decatur woman launches presidential bid. Saying the country is at a crisis point, a Decatur woman launched her Republican bid for president Thursday. Sherry Procarioni, 55, described herself as a fiscal and social conservative who believes many people are frustrated with elected officials who follow the status quo. She announced her candidacy in Central Park, making note of the location where Abraham Lincoln was endorsed for president at the Illinois Republican Convention in 1860. "I decided to run because everywhere I go I am hearing that people are tired of electing officials. As soon as they get into office, they set up more programs and spend more money," she said. "The people and myself are just tired and want a candidate who will get in and keep their oath of office." Procarioni is a frequent attendee of Decatur City Council and other local government meetings, where she often poses questions and generally speaks in favor of a narrowly focused government. She said she has spent the past 36 years focusing on raising her 12 children and has volunteered more as they grew older. She has never held political office, but said that she feels her best asset is that she is not a politician. "Raising a large family, well, I will say that probably puts me in a very good position to be able to deal with this legislature and negotiate and try to bring the legislative process back to where it's supposed to be instead of where it is today, being usurped through either court decisions or through going around the legislative process by regulatory agencies who are now making law through regulation instead of through Congress, she said. That is where our laws are supposed to be made. Procarioni said government regulations hurt businesses, and she would move to improve the economy by reducing them and lowering taxes. Her plans include the elimination of the Environmental Protection Agency and Internal Revenue Service, as well as the estate tax. We need to put more people in to work. And I believe how you do that is you simply remove some of the regulations that have been stifling business. Small businesses are overloaded with taxes and fees, so we want to remove that as well, she said. She said she would support harvesting resources including oil, coal, nuclear energy, and natural gas, and defunding and repealing the Affordable Care Act. To get the word out about her campaign, Procarioni said she plans to use social media, look for volunteers, and hope that people who identify with her position will support her campaign financially. States have their own processes for primary elections and caucuses. In Illinois, Procarioni would need to collect between 3,000 and 5,000 petition signatures to appear on the primary ballot, according to the Illinois State Board of Elections. Familiar Central Illinois artist chosen for Alabama Museum. Shelbyville. The ultimate goal for any artist is to have their work shown in a museum. But according to artist Dan Modzelewski, there's just one problem. Usually you have to die to be in a museum, he said. Modzelewski has bypassed that obstacle. He will have three of his baseball drawings displayed at the American Sport Art Museum and Archives in Daphne, Alabama, beginning this summer. His work has been seen throughout Central Illinois, including exhibits at Gallery 510 and Flourishes Gallery and Studios in Shelbyville. I'm really proud to have him here, said Barbara Dove, executive director of Gallery 510. He is just very good. Now living in Shelbyville, Modzelewski retired as an art teacher from Downers Grove South High School and the College of DuPage. I retired early and concentrated on being a professional artist, he said. Modzelewski has been focusing on sports for approximately 3 years. His work is described as figurative art with an emphasis on sports. The drawings are done with charcoals and pastels and in a sepia tone. I do them in sepia because I want to show that sport is timeless, he said. These aren't any particular player. It's baseball. He and his wife are vacationing in Fairhope, Alabama, when they stumbled across the museum. It's an absolutely gorgeous museum. They have a beautiful setting with sculptures on the grounds and murals in the building. Located on the campus of the United States Sports Academy, the museum was established in 1984, with the intent to preserve the art and history of all sports. It has over 1,500 pieces, including sculptures, photographs, and posters from modern-day Olympic Games. While touring the museum, Modzelewski asked how an artist could get a piece displayed. I kind of did it on a whim. He was told to submit 6 photographs with a letter of intent to donate. 2 weeks later, he received an email saying that they had selected 3 pieces of his work. I had been associated with a lot of galleries before, but this is the biggest thing that has ever happened to me as far as art goes. He will travel to Alabama to submit his drawings and then meet with the museum board for final details. Modzelewski also displays new artwork at Gallery 510 this fall. Though the theme will be similar to past exhibits, his last show here was 2 years ago, Dove said. It was in October because that was the World Series. Modzelewski gives credit to Dove and the staff at Gallery 510 for his local exhibits, and he is equally proud of his accomplishments outside of Central Illinois. The idea that my great-great-grandfather, children, can go in and see this artwork is really wonderful, in a really wonderful museum is pretty exciting, he said. That's all we have time for the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 5th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.